Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Tim Ellis, sitting in for Dan Bross. The University of Alaska is looking at selling UAF's new power plant. University officials have issued a request for proposals for an outside consultant to investigate options for monetizing the $245 million coal-fired combined heat and electricity generating facility. UA Chief Financial Officer Myron Dosh says selling the UAF facility outright is just one of a few power plant monetization options that the RFP seeks analysis for.
Another option might be to sell power to a local utility or to enter into a concession arrangement where the counterparty basically operates the power plant in exchange for an upfront payment, and then a payment over time.
Dosh says the new UAF heat and power plant is a valuable asset, and he says other universities have monetized similar facilities. He emphasizes that it's only an option that's being considered, adding that it is not in response to offers or interests expressed from a utility or other outside entity. Dosh says if UA did take action to sell or otherwise monetize the plant, proceeds or revenue would be directed towards specific uses.
It hasn't been decided yet, but types of things that it could be used for is to, work sort of like an endowment to help, either pay for deferred maintenance, to help, instruction or student aid efforts, or in part as well to help pay for the payment that would be due to the utility provider.
The power plant monetization RFP went out last week, and responses are due by March 5th. Dosh says the respondent could be a consulting firm or financial institution like an investment bank. He says the university is looking at the potential of infrastructure monetization opportunities across the UA system, including other structures such as parking garages and parking lots at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Governor Mike Dunleavy on Wednesday proposed to give residents supplemental payouts from the state's oil wealth fund of about $1,300, which would be on top of the roughly $1,600 checks that Alaskans received last fall. The legislature last year approved a permanent fund dividend that amounted to about $1,600, but the state revenue department said the amount would have been just over $2,900 had they followed a formula in state law. Dunleavy's proposal would make up the rest of that $2,900 amount. The formula hasn't been followed in recent years amid a budget deficit, and many lawmakers say the formula is unsustainable. The governor's supplemental payout proposal would cost the state $815 million and would be paid with permanent fund earnings, according to his budget office. House Speaker Bryce Edgman responded to Dunleavy's proposal by saying there wasn't support for a larger dividend last year, and he doesn't think there'll be support this year either. A former Coast Guard admiral and pipeline executive will head Governor Mike Dunleavy's advisory group on state ferries. Thomas Barrett retired from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company last year, and before that he was a vice admiral in the Coast Guard until he retired in 2004. Barrett will chair the 9-person advisory group tasked with charting a course for the Alaska Marine Highway System. The governor blamed poor planning by prior administrations for the widespread disruptions to transportation across coastal Alaska caused by the unavailability of ferries.
If there are individuals that wish to hang in on this administration, that's fine. We're big boys. We're gonna work at fixing this thing. This is decades in the making.
But Dunleavy told reporters Wednesday that his team is committed to looking at regional transportation that goes beyond the Alaska Marine Highway System.
We are going to do everything we can to make sure that we come up with a sustainable mode or multiple methods of transportation for Southeast, South Central Alaska, those communities that are impacted by the ferries.
The governor says the working group will be poring over a $250,000 study his administration commissioned last year. Regional service has been idle for weeks following the breakdown of the sole mainline ferry in service. That's following sweeping cost-cutting that had tied up vessels, deferred repairs, and left no backup ferries. This month, the State Department of Transportation solicited interest from private companies to run passengers and limited freight around Southeast Alaska. Commissioner John McKinnon says his department received responses from some potential operators.
If the lack of available ships continues, we're going to engage them. and we're going to take care of whatever transportation needs we can.
Limited service is supposed to resume next month, but it remains unclear how long the fleet's sole mainliner, the Matanuska, will remain offline. The ship broke down and needs to be repaired at the Ketchikan shipyard. Transportation officials had said the ferry would be back in service by early March, but the ship remains tied up in Juneau's Auk Bay, and no date has been set for the ship to move south for repairs. Military training ranges around the interior soon will be buzzing with activity as the biggest exercise to be held in Alaska this year gets underway next week. It's called Arctic Edge 20, and it's intended to provide training in extreme cold weather conditions. It's held every other year by the North American Aerospace Defense Command and the U.S. Northern Command, and the Air Force's Alaskan Command at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson will serve as the host headquarters for the exercise, which will be held from Monday through March 6th. Arctic Edge will involve about 1,000 U.S. military personnel who will be joined by members of the Canadian Armed Forces. Most of the activity will be conducted in airspace within the Joint Pacific Alaska Range Complex. That's the 60,000 square mile series of ranges spread throughout the interior. Communities that may see an increase in activity include Fairbanks, North Pole, Delta Junction, Circle, Pleasant Valley, Lime Village, and Sleetmute.
And they're off.
The Iron Dog team of Tyler Acklestad and Nick Olstad were the first racers back on the trail at 7 this morning. They now have 1,000 miles to go from Nome to the finish line in Big Lake. KNOM Radio reports that Acklestad and Olstad's team number 7 had about an hour and a half lead on the second position team of Brad George and Tyson Johnson, but they started only 45 minutes ahead of them. Race Marshal Brian Webb says George and Johnson were scheduled to leave Nome at 7:45, followed by the third position team of Todd Minnick and Daniel Thibault just before 8. The front runners now head toward White Mountain, Koyuk, and onto the eastern Norton Sound coastline. The Iron Dog website says trail conditions in that area consists of a lot of fresh snow, similar to what the racers saw on Tuesday. And some of the team's machines took quite a beating on that stretch of the trail on their way to Nome.
We had a rough time yesterday.
That's Team 49's Clinton Van Wingerden.
We lost two A-arms on separate sleds, and then lost our chain in the chain case. It hit a rock or something and lost all the oil, and then the chain failed.
Van Wingerden says this is the most snow he's ever seen on the Iron Dog Trail in his 6 years of racing it. He and teammate Andrew Gumley are currently in eighth position, set to leave Nome in about 45 minutes. All 16 teams remaining in this year's Iron Dog may have to be a little more cautious as they race that last 1,000 miles. The National Weather Service has issued a winter weather advisory for the eastern Norton Sound that calls for blowing and drifting snow, less than a mile of visibility, and 40-mile-per-hour winds on the trail ahead. The 2020 Iron Dog winners are expected to arrive in Big Lake sometime Saturday morning. For KUAC News, I'm Tim Ellis.